So imagine you had 1,000 pictures and you wanted to teach your computer how to identify which of these pictures may contain a giraffe. And so what you do is you go and you tell the computer the first one, this is a giraffe. And then you tell it to go through the other 999 pictures and identify if there are giraffes in any of the others. And let's say the day you took these pictures, you were at the zoo. So odds are higher that there are pictures of giraffes in these pictures. That process where the computer learns which pictures are giraffes is machine learning. Now let's say that you found giraffes, I want you to figure out what patterns would make these either a boy or a girl. And that's when you get into artificial intelligence. Today's episode, we're going to talk about artificial intelligence. This is the One-Off Technology Podcast with your host, Roy Richardson. Each week we cover topics in the news and how they affect you. Sit back, relax, and open your mind. This week I was reading an article, and it's available in several publications, about basically a group of scientists who took all of Nirvana's songs and ran them through an algorithm to try to determine basically what makes a Nirvana song. Now, it turns out they had done the same process for Jimi Hendrix. They had done the same process for Amy Winehouse. And then, after they figured out how what components made up a Nirvana song, they then had the computer write the lyrics and create the music for a Nirvana song. And then they reached out to the lead singer of a Nirvana tribute band and asked him to sing those lyrics. Now, the guy's not a perfect voice copy of Kurt Cobain. And it's kind of ironic that it's been 27 years this week that Kurt Cobain passed away. But this song sounded like a Nirvana song. It sounded like a song that might have been in Utero. In fact, the headline kind of read, In Computero. And I was listening to it, and I listened to the Jimi Hendrix song. The Jimi Hendrix song was pretty convincing. And the Amy Winehouse song was pretty good. So, and I'll have links on the website about, you know, back to that website so you can go and listen to these samples yourself. There's an article in Rolling Stone. The interesting thing that kind of quirked my mind there, that kind of piqued my interest there as I'm thinking about it, is the day is coming when you won't know what's real. I mean, in some ways you could say that's already here. What is real? But with deep fakes, for example, you see where they take President Obama's head and suddenly he's rapping. And so you have a YouTube video with President Obama and he's suddenly rapping a song. Or you see the work that they're doing where they take, and I mentioned this a couple weeks ago, where they take pictures of your loved ones and animate them. It reminds me of a movie called Running Man starring Arnold Schwarzenegger. And it struck me because it had Richard Dawson playing a game show host. And so the game they were playing was very bloody. And one of the characters was killed. And so they basically used artificial intelligence of that, you know, fictional world and recreated that person and had the person kind of finish the fight that they were in. So, you know, I think about the day when news is going to be such where you don't know if the news you're watching is real. I know that, you know, George Lucas was kind of looking to a world where all of the actors in his movies were computer generated and he just had people voice the characters. And then eventually you get to the point where the computers voice the characters And so you didn't need actors at all in order to do movies because computers were doing both the acting and, you know, reading the words. A lot of our news now is generated through artificial intelligence. It takes pieces of different stories and creates a news story. And some of the articles that you read in the newspaper are computer generated now. Or you may read these articles on Google News. Not a lot, but it's happening. And was recently reached out to by a company that was trying to sell me a service where they would write titles for my podcast episodes using artificial intelligence. I didn't really see a need for that, but I guess if you didn't know how to write a winning title, and I probably don't, but this artificial intelligence was going to take what your whole podcast was about and boil it down into a quick line that grabbed headlines and basically acted as clickbait to get you to listen to the podcast. And they were offering to do samples. You know, you send them your podcast and they were going to come back and say, this is what your title should be for your podcast. And that's fascinating. I thought it was very fascinating, but not something that I needed. But it's getting interesting and it makes you wonder, what can we trust? I'm not a conspiracy theory person. I'll go ahead and tell you that now. There's always a grain of truth to every lie, though, and because that underlying truth is what makes a lie almost believable. And so, even when people have conspiracy theories, they're usually taking pieces of real information and adding their slant or their belief system to it. But my concern is that there's going to be a day when we watch the news and we don't know if what we're watching is real. We're going to see a documentary and we don't know if it's real. There's going to be a time when we just won't know what is real. And how do we determine that? And so, you know, some would say that's a reason not to allow artificial intelligence. And I disagree because artificial intelligence is already, those algorithms are allowing medical research to happen at a speed it never possibly could before. Imagine being able to isolate cancer cells very quickly in someone because artificial intelligence has taught them well enough to spot patterns. Recently, there was some artificial intelligence, an algorithm was created in order to diagnose people with COVID, and it had an 85% accuracy of being able to identify whether a person had COVID or not based off their symptoms. A human doctor, for example, wasn't able to be quite that accurate. And so, very fascinating stuff. And so, AI is so important. It's going to make amazing things happen, and it's just a matter of time. But at the same time, with everything, there's good, and then there's the bad, and then there's the evil. And so, anything that's good can be used for evil purposes. Chapter 2. So this week I'm excited because Oracle lost a $9 billion lawsuit with Google. So probably about 10 years ago, well, let's go back a little bit further than that. So the original Android phone, last week was talking about some of my tech loves, and I talked about Android. The original Android phones were loosely based off of Java code. And Oracle bought Sun Microsystems, which created the original Java. And I like to laugh at Java because Java is a programming language that was originally written for cable TV boxes. I kid you not, the original Java was written to create an operating system for cable TV boxes so that they were easier to program. And so then somebody said, oh wow, this is cool. We could take Java and run it in kind of a captured environment, and then it could run on any system. So it's basically write once and run many was the concept. And so theoretically, the program you wrote in Java would work on Linux and Windows and Mac OS. And For the most part, it does. I've always found Java to be slow. There's been some implementations that have proved me wrong, but I know that overall, though, I've always felt Java slow. And I have a love-hate relationship with Java because, true confession, Java programming is the only the only college class I ever failed, ever. Now, admittedly, I was in the middle of one of the biggest projects of my life at work, and I was attending school online. And the counselor's like, "Oh, well, you're familiar. I had taken Java previously." And the counselor's like, "Well, if you've taken it previously, you'll be just fine in here." But this was Java writing a GUI. I had done all text-based Java, basically like writing basic. I just did basic Java, so nothing fancy. He's like, "Oh, you'll be fine." So I attempted to do a major project and this programming class at the same time, and one of them had to give. And so I went with the job. And so what I should have done, though, is when I realized I was in trouble, I should have dropped the class, but I was too stubborn to drop the class. I was too stubborn. So my 4.0 GPA dropped to a 3.6. That one class. I had thought about going back and taking it, but I just decided I would hate Java forever. And then recently, Oracle changed the licensing on their JDE, Java Development Kit, so that if you wanted to use Java, you had to pay money. Just to run the JRE, the Java Runtime Environment, you had to pay money if you were going to use it for commercial purposes. And so basically, any version of Java past 1.8, consumers can use it for free, but businesses can't. And so at one time, Sun was going to make Java open source. And if you're familiar with open source meant freely usable by anybody, as long as whatever changes you made to it, you had to distribute those out. If you were going to make a change, that we're going to send out to people. So it's a little, not quite that cut and dry, but the great thing about open source is that anybody can use it, anybody can do anything they want with it, and so good stuff. And the problem here, though, is that it makes Oracle seem greedy. So Sun never did make Java truly open source. Now there is an open JDK, so there is an open source version of Java out there that you're freely able to use. And Oracle said that basically Google was stealing their code, using it for the Android operating system. Oracle and Google were having a big falling out anyway, so anything Oracle could find to fuss at Google about, they would fuss at them about. And Google only used just over 11,000 lines of Java code. The Supreme Court ruled this week that Google's use of Java, the way they use it, is fair use. And if you're not familiar with fair use doctrine says basically, you can use what you have, and you can kind of make implementations of it, you can make changes to it, and just kind of find, make a new item out of it. And so fair use kind of allows that. Fair use used to be, and now the waters have gotten kind of muddy, where I could take the album that I bought on CD and record it to cassette, and I'm just fine to play that in my car. But then when MP3s came around, fair use kind of got a beating, and so it's never been clear anymore what fair use can, it feels like if you buy something, you own it. But here we are in the world of subscriptions, where you don't really own anything. And so that's a different topic for a different day. But I was happy to see Oracle lose this case. Even Microsoft wanted Oracle to lose this case because you should be able to use portions of something in order to create something new. And that's exactly what Google did. Google created the Android operating system. Later, actually, that's a different story. Another company created the Android operating system, and Google bought it and kept going with it. But that's a history lesson for another day. Microsoft wanted Google to win this because that fair use doctrine on programming code is crucial for so many products. It's going to be very interesting what precedent this court case has and how things in the world go from there. Chapter 3. So, this is from the Internet Never Forgets archives. So, I read an article in Wired this week where a woman was talking about the fact that she had been planning her wedding. She had been on Pinterest. She had been on multiple social networks. She had viewed multiple bridal magazines online. And then she had to call the wedding off and they broke up. But the internet didn't forget that she was about to get married. And she continues a long period of time later to still get stuff from things. For example, she got a happy anniversary email from one of the websites she had signed up with. And Pinterest is still trying to send her daily collages of wedding paraphernalia. And so all these memories are still stalking her. I have to imagine, kind of like when we talked about in a previous episode, where Google has all these ads and knows so much about you and keeps sending you all these messages. And the crazy thing about it is that we are creating digital footprints everywhere. And those footprints, you know, online websites, Google, Facebook, others are using them to sell us ads. And so the internet never forgets. When you speak out against something and somebody goes on Twitter and finds out that 5 years ago you said the total opposite of that, the internet never forgets. So always be careful what you post online. And I guess that's it for this week's podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for listening to the One-Off Technology Podcast. I'm your host, Roy Richardson, and this was episode 4 of season 3. Thank you so much. Thank you for subscribing. You've been listening to the One-Off Technology Podcast with your host, Roy Richardson. Be sure to subscribe wherever you find your podcasts on Apple, Google, Stitcher, and Spotify.